On a Sunday night, everybody. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. We've got a lot to get to tonight. I have no guests planned for this evening, this Sunday night. I know. You're saying to yourself, Gard, is it because they're all hanging out watching Sound of Music? No, we'll talk about the Sound of Music and the weird vibe it gave me when I was a kid. Maybe later. No, in fact, the reason I'm not going to have any guests tonight, unless you decide to contact me, I'll open up the Skype line shortly to offer you the opportunity to weigh in with your opinions about some of the questions that I pose. The reason I'm not going to have any guests tonight is because tonight I've designed the program to be essentially like one of the podcasts that I would have designed a while back. Essentially, a number of issues that I want to just throw out there for you, especially later on for people if they want to listen to this in a packaged form, because I've been doing some research, I've got some information, and I want to offer this program to you as almost a live podcast, a podcast done live without a net. I've got a number of stories that I think deserve some attention if you're interested in the individual liberty type of thing going back centuries, if you're fascinated by that, or if you think that it's an important time to actually be talking about these things and trying to spread the word, the essentials, the primary ingredients of individual liberty, sovereignty, libertarianism, and the right to own oneself. So tonight, I've decided to give you our news update, but very quickly, out of the news update, out of each one of these stories, I'm going to turn this into a podcast conversation and try to really delve into some of these things. So first off, I want to ask some folks out there. I have posed a question, and I am going to leave this question hanging until a little bit later on when we get to our second subject. They're actually tied together. But let me ask you this question going into this, as if we're sort of in a lecture hall, and you and I are sitting there listening to some guy talk. Here's a question we're hearing, okay? I threw this out on Facebook. When you hear the terms privacy law and expert in privacy law, do you react with a positive feeling about your rights, a negative feeling about your rights, or do you need more context? Okay, so I'm laying that out there because in about 15 minutes or so, maybe 20 minutes, we're going to get to the second part of this two-phase project that I put together on tonight's show. And, of course, it has to do with privacy rights. So just think about that. Again, when you hear the terms privacy law and expert in privacy law, do you react with a positive feeling, a negative feeling, or do you need more context? Okay? All right. Now, let's do a little something that will start to get us in this direction. Remember last week when I discussed ABC News and the way that they have repeatedly shilled for GM and misconstrued the real facts about the GM bailout, the real facts being that GM paid back $10 billion less than what they got because the government gave them a deal to pay them back in stock options. And those stock options aren't worth enough based on the number of shares that they gave to the government. So the government ended up $10 billion under, right? We talked about that. That's the latest podcast. That is actually an over two-and-a-half-hour podcast, which includes that subject, a conversation with Ferb and Glenn Jacobs about Bitcoin, and a lot of other things. And I might split off the conversation about Bitcoin because people have asked me to do that. So if I get time, I'll do it for you. But I wanted to play a little something by the Sex Pistols because I get very frustrated by bad journalists. And by that, I got to stress, I don't mean by the fact that journalists show that they are subjective, that they are not objective. We're all subjective creatures, right? We're all subjective. And you can't get around that. But at least people can try to be fair. Or they can be, they can investigate something and show the viewers that they also have had a little spark set off in their brains where they say, maybe I'll look into this a little bit more. To me, it's either laziness or deceitfulness or something like that that I don't like when ABC does that. And I had a theme that I wanted to play, and I used to play it all the time on New Hampshire radio, and I didn't have it. I was like, oh, shoot, I wanted to get it. This is the theme, and guess what? We get to play this again, this time about another network and another conversation. This is from the Filthy Lucre album when the Sex Pistols came back in 1996. It is, of course, the song that is 6 minutes in when John Lydon starts this way.
And a journalist's out there.
So now we get to get into our first topic, shall we? Wait, I want to hear the guitar slide. An imitation from New York. And you know what's so funny is this is a song about the New York Dolls, but I love the New York Dolls. It's great. I don't know, those pills. All right, so enough of the music. Let's get to this subject that I want to discuss, all right? And with great deference to the Sex Pistols, I like their attitude. We agree on some things, disagree on other things. But listen to this. I posted this on my Facebook page. Larry Klayman. We mentioned Larry Klayman last week. Larry Klayman formed an organization called Judicial Watch back in the 90s when Clinton was president. It's sort of a paleo-conservative judicial activist group that takes donations from people and has proceeded to bring a bunch of lawsuits against the Clinton administration, against Dick Cheney. They have not necessarily – they started off looking like they were just going to try to nail Clinton and the Democrats all the time. But they have gone after. They went after the Bushies. Now, Larry Klayman has brought a suit against the NSA metadata collection system. All right? And they had a decision last week, last Wednesday, that went in their favor in a federal district court. We're going to talk about that a little more. But Klayman, just to sort of introduce this and show you just how truly, truly devious and nasty, and I think sometimes ignorant of their own biases, these network guys are, many of them. I don't want to broad brush everybody because I'd be guilty of doing some of what they do. Many of these guys, and it's been like this, it's pervaded the pop media since before cable TV was on. I remember when I was a little kid, I mean, I was like 10 years old, and I'd watch these guys, I'm like, oh, my God, man, these guys are all left-wing Democrats. I could tell because there was stuff that they weren't telling me that I was reading in other areas. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why aren't they telling me this stuff? So anyway, they've always leaned left-wing. Polls have shown they always lean left-wing. 80-something percent of them back in the 70s were going to vote for McGovern. I mean, come on, you know. That's the way they go. So Larry Klayman, after this decision from the district court that found that the NSA spying program was indeed a spying program that broke the Fourth Amendment, now it's going to be pushed up to the higher courts and so on. Larry Klayman was invited to go on to a program on CNN. When he appeared on the program, and pay close attention to this, I'll reiterate it after we come back from commercials. But when he was invited onto the program, Klayman didn't get to speak first. They had a 2-minute piece about this decision. And guess what? It wasn't about the decision. It was about Larry Klayman. Wait till you hear what these people do as a setup before they bring Klayman on and give him virtually no time to respond to all the stuff they presented. Okay, so now let's go to Larry Klayman's appearance. Larry Klayman just gets a district court judge to agree with him. Not only does a district court judge say, yes, you have had your Fourth Amendment rights broken, he has to defer this to the higher court, so it's not the final word on it, of course, but he says explicitly that the techniques that the NSA uses are beyond Orwellian. Okay? Now we have Larry Klayman appears on CNN. But before he actually appears, what do you see? Check it out. Here's journalism for you, okay?
Hallelujah. Edward Snowden tries to make a deal. The NSA leaker is offering to help Brazil investigate U.S. surveillance of Brazilian citizens. In exchange, he wants asylum. Brazil's president canceled a planned trip to the U.S. in October over revelations based on documents obtained by Snowden that the U.S. had spied on Brazil. This comes one day after a big victory for the anti-spying contingent. A federal judge ruled that the NSA's domestic phone surveillance program is likely unconstitutional. Now, that ruling only applies to this single suit. And it's somewhat controversial, a somewhat controversial suit brought in part by a pretty controversial figure. Larry.
Okay, so what you got is you had basically 15 or 20 seconds of actual information. Now comes the broad brush. Check this out. A fairly controversial person, Larry Klayman.
This isn't Larry Klayman's first legal crusade.
Our goal here is to pry open this veneer of secrecy.
And it isn't even close to the first time he sued the U.S. government.
And we are now ruled, quote unquote, by a president,
imperialistic president,
who bows down to Allah.
Last year, he filed a lawsuit arguing that Barack Obama couldn't be president because, quote, neither Mr. Obama nor the Democratic Party of Florida nor any other group has confirmed that Mr. Obama is a natural-born citizen. Back in the 90s, Klayman filed at least 18 suits against the Clinton administration. He's also taken on former Vice President Dick Cheney, Facebook, OPEC, even his own mother. Brad Blakeman is a professor at Georgetown University and a former member of President George W. Bush's senior staff. He, too, has been sued by Klayman.
I think Larry is a professional litigant. He's the thorn in everybody's side. He pretends that he's fighting for the little guy when he's really fighting for himself and his own, in my opinion, delusions of grandeur.
Klayman's been at it for years. He founded the conservative government watchdog group Judicial Watch, a group, you guessed it, Klayman later sued. Yesterday's NSA ruling was a huge victory for Klayman, a victory applauded by NSA leaker Edward Snowden, who said, quote, today a secret program authorized by a secret court was, when exposed to the light of day, found to violate Americans' rights. It is the first of many. But Klayman's critics are quick to point out that this battle isn't over.
He may have won a battle. He certainly has not won the war. There's a lot more to the NSA case to come in the appellate courts. This case could also reach the Supreme Court. I don't think Larry has the ability, either intellectually or legally, to take this case to where it needs to go beyond the district court, my opinion.
So I want to bring in Larry Klayman now, as well as CNN's senior legal analyst, Mr. Jeffrey Toobin.
Okay. Now, I know we're coming up to the next commercial set. But I'll try to roll into this. And then they've got that hack, Jeffrey Toobin, who's, you know, so tied to government, it's just ridiculous. So you got a guy who's been outside government for a long time. And instead of actually talking about the content of the suit and what the judge said, they spent 2 minutes, over 2 minutes, talking about the guy, Larry Klayman, right? Wait till you see what they do when they bring Klayman on. And then we'll talk about the content ourselves, right? We'll talk about the NSA, the Constitution and Freedom at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Now, as I mentioned, Larry Klayman's been around for a while. He started Judicial Watch. We played a little bit of this thing that was put together, this package that was put together, video package, clips and interviews and things like that, that lasted over 2 minutes. Lasted almost 2 minutes. That was presented by the folks at CNN before they brought on Larry Klayman. And it wasn't about the actual lawsuit. It was about Larry Klayman. Let's hear just a little bit as we head to the end.
Brad Blakeman is a professor at Georgetown University and a former member of President George W. Bush's senior staff. He, too, has been sued by Klayman.
I think Larry is a professional litigant. He's the thorn in everybody's side. He pretends that he's fighting for the little guy when he's really fighting for himself and his own, in my opinion, delusions of grandeur.
Klayman's been at it for years. He founded the conservative government watchdog group Judicial Watch, a group, you guessed it, Klayman later sued. Yesterday's NSA ruling was a huge victory for Klayman, a victory applauded by NSA leaker Edward Snowden, who said, quote, today a secret program authorized by a secret court was, when exposed to the light of day, found to violate Americans' rights. It is the first of many, but Clayman's critics are quick to point out that this battle isn't over.
He may have won a battle. He certainly has not won the war. There's a lot more to the NSA case to come in the appellate courts. This case could also reach the Supreme Court. I don't think Larry has the ability, either intellectually or legally, to take this case to where it needs to go beyond the district court, my opinion.
Okay, now we're going to go into the Larry Clayman appearance. You don't need me commentating while that goes on, commenting while it goes on about, you know, bringing things up like, yeah, you guessed it, and all the little things that they put in here to color this piece against the guy Larry Clayman. But whether Larry Clayman is likable or Larry Clayman is a professional litigant or anything has nothing to frigging do with the Constitution of the United States, the Fourth Frigging Amendment, and what the frigging NSA has been doing, what CNN did not discuss. The fact that the NSA was breaching private contract with the phone companies using a secret court created in 1978, which was from a law that was proposed by none other than the manslaughtering driver Ted Kennedy, who I don't think is going to be having too much fun for the rest of eternity if you believe in that stuff, and they don't even bother to talk about it. Instead, they talk about Larry Clayman. That's all. The guy who brought the suit, not the actual suit. Now they bring Larry Clayman on.
So I want to bring in Larry Clayman now, as well as CNN's senior legal analyst, Mr. Jeffrey Toobin. Larry, to you first. You just heard one of your former adversaries, Don. Brad Blakeman. He said that, let me ask a question and you can answer. He said you won the battle, not the war. He doesn't think you have the intellectual or the legal ability to take this fight to the finish.
Okay, so what they do is they set this whole thing up. And then they say, oh, no, wait, don't say anything. Be courteous, right? That's the implication. No, wait, let me ask the question. You can answer. So then he sits up, do you have the ability to bring this case all the way to the end, right? You heard what he said. So then they siphon out all of the extraneous garbage that they've tried to heap upon this man, Larry Clayman, and they try to prevent him from actually addressing all this stuff that was character assassination that lasted almost 2 minutes in the beginning of this frigging piece. It's just insidious. It's so terrible. I can't believe anybody who has a network show would do something like that. It's unbelievable. But thank God Larry Clayman tried to call him for it. Here goes Larry Clayman. He tried.
Bonds.
Well, I would say to be one is to know one. Brad Blakeman, I had to sue because he used Freedom Watch's trademark. I asked him to stop. I brought a lawsuit. He's associated with Sheldon Adelson, who I'm sure you don't like, who runs the Venetian Empire in Las Vegas. And he's obviously got an axe to grind on. I think it's important to note that you're a big supporter of Obama. You have favored him in every respect. You have to try to do a hit piece to diminish a very important decision.
Are you talking about Larry me personally?
Clayman. But you know that. I'm talking about you personally.
I don't think you know that about you. I don't think you can continue on, but that none of that is true, but go on.
Well, it is true, Don. I've watched you for many years. You're an ultra-leftist, and you're a big supporter of Obama. And the reality is, let's talk about the NSA. Let's not talk about Larry Clayman. This victory is for the American people. It wasn't for me. And you, as somebody from the left, and I've gotten more compliments from the left in the last few days and even from the right, should appreciate that you don't have a police state in this country that's going to be able to intimidate Americans to chill their free speech rights, their associational rights. The NSA has data on all of us, metadata, which deals with our personal lives. It's clearly a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But rather than talking about that, you've got to try to take out somebody who's challenged President Obama. And I'll stand by everything I've said and everything I've done.
Listen, people, Larry, I'm not here. Hang on, Jeffrey, before you jump in, listen, I'm not here to get into an argument with you. Nothing you have said has been correct about me or the reason we're doing this story. So you can continue
to
attack. Listen, will you let me finish, please? You can continue to attack me or attack CNN or whatever you want to do. But let me just say this. The only person who decides my political leanings, whether I'm left or right, are me. The only people who know that for sure, the person
you know
who knows
what,
that for sure,
I'm not attacking
is me.
CNN. I'm not attacking CNN.
But listen, I just want you to know.
CNN.
I want you to finish.
But I am.
I want
issue with
to
you.
Finish. Will you let me finish, okay, or I'm going to cut your mic, and then Jeffrey and I will finish this conversation.
Well, that is
for me to
Amendment.
Decide. Thank you very much, Jeff. Well, how far will this case go?
Okay, let me just read from this opinion, page 39.
Okay, now this is interesting. It sounds like Jeffrey Toobin is going to be the balancing guy, right? Well, if, of course, if you know Jeffrey Toobin, you know he is so far to the left, nobody could get on the seesaw on the other side to balance this guy. Okay, and I love this host, whatever his name is, John, Tom, whatever, and they're sitting there going, are you attacking me? Dude, you just spent almost 2 friggin' minutes attacking the guy that you had on, and you didn't give him a chance to address your attacks that you guys put together in your package piece. And believe me, I was in Washington, D.C. I've covered Capitol Hill. And guess what? You are a hardcore leftist. You do support Obama all the time. It's incredibly reflective in your news reports. And if you don't think so, you're ignorant of yourself. It's incredible. It's amazing to see this stuff.
Mr. Klayman responded, why is he bringing this suit? I think they, the NSA, are messing with me. Then went on to explain that he and his clients had received inexplicable test messages and emails, not to mention a disk containing a spyware program. In other words, this case is based on Larry Klayman's tinfoil hat paranoia about the NSA being after him. He had some fantasy that the NSA was after him. This case is not about Larry Klayman. It's about the metadata program that affects everybody. But the idea that Larry Klayman is the representative is simply outrageous because he is a professional litigant and lunatic.
You see what this guy's doing? It's not about Larry Klayman. It's about the NSA thing. But really, it's about Larry Klayman. I mean, it's just amazing the way these people do it. It's like they spit in your face and say, hey, don't come shoving that spit into my face. I'm like, dude, you spit at me. If I shake it off, what the heck? It's unbelievable what these people do.
Who should not be a representative of the very important issues of this case.
All right. We've got some commercials coming up here. Hope you'll check out some of the folks who sponsor us. Remember to visit us at our website. You can weigh in. I'll open up the Skype line, too, in a moment. And if you want to contact me, it's G-A-R-D-N-E-R, Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. Liberty Conspiracy Radio will continue, and we'll get more in-depth into spying.
Bobby's off on holiday. Away across the sea, setting up his easel, a new scene to see. Says that he's had enough of standing in the rain. Now he's looking for the good life, European pain. Did you know your garden's overgrown? What a show. Pretty girls are singing golden hair. He's in touch with the painter's mind. See something just there. Drinking wine in the Moulin Rouge. Sipping coffee in Berlin. Romantic in the color lights. In the city they cast in. He could see the writing on the wall. Did you know your garden's overgrown? What a show. There were times you wished the world would fade just into sight. Yeah.
Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio on LRN.FM. Good to have you here, everybody. LG Grande. That, of course, stands for the big G in Espanol. It's the G big. And I posted on Facebook tonight. I was getting kind of whacked out. And I was just messing around. And I posted about tonight's show in Espanol. And my friend Stephen Smith, who's like, you know, incredibly well-versed in Espanol. He was really funny on Facebook. He goes, me estás montando, che. So he says, you're killing me. And so I was right. I say, sí, soy un loco asesino. I'm a mad killer. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks very much for being here. By the way, if I sound a little bit funny tonight, I apologize. I've got a cut on my mouth, and so sometimes I'm going to sound a little whacked out. I've actually got some stuff. It's called Aura Base. I want to promote this to anybody. If you ever get like canker sores or a cold sore or anything like that, Aura Base is just the most amazing stuff. It's like 10% some sort of like benzocaine or something like that. 2%, maybe 2%, yeah. It is just fantastic. It's great. It's made by Colgate, and I want to thank those guys because they have made my life so much easier sometimes. Because I get canker sores sometimes. They drive me nuts. And so in this case, I get a cut. It's driving me crazy. It's painful. So I just wanted to give you the heads up. If I do sound kind of funny, hopefully that won't enter your mind visually because I'm just, what can I tell you? I'm such a handsome man, baby. Yeah. All right. No, I'm not a lazy sod. I was just listening to the Sex Pistols during the break. I love the song Lazy Sod. So, okay. I'm going to put this down. I was going to play a little more from Filthy Lucre. But I want to get back to the subject of Larry Klayman's appearance on CNN, the bad journalism. Remember, this is how they depicted Mr. Klayman when they went to the supposed balance, which is Jeffrey Toobin.
Received inexplicable text messages and emails, not to mention a disc containing a spyware program.
Talking about the NSA suit that Larry Klayman brought against the NSA to district court and succeeded. Now it's going to go to higher courts, of course. This is what Mr. Toobin had to say.
In other words, this case is based on Larry Klayman's tinfoil hat paranoia about the NSA being after him. He had some fantasy that the NSA was after him. This case is not about Larry Klayman. It's about the metadata program that affects everybody. But the idea that Larry Klayman is the representative is simply outrageous because he
is a
professional litigant and lunatic who should not be a representative of the very important issues of this case.
Now, what's interesting, and I don't know whether I'll play the whole thing, is Mr. Toobin tries to see, this is weird. You'll see this sometimes, especially in radio folks or television folks, and I try to avoid it as much as possible. News people do this a lot, and when they have these opinions and stuff, they allow their opinions on. He tries to make it seem as if he's with the public in decrying the NSA, or at least I'll say he tries to make it sound like he's with the public with their concern about the NSA program, right? And that this is an important issue, and I'm very fair and balanced, and therefore I think this needs to be heard, but not with this crazy guy that I'm saying is a lunatic, Larry Klayman. Oh, no, this is beneath the subject. It's much more important than Larry Klayman. Again, not actually addressing the subject, trying to slam Larry Klayman. Oh, this guy's just a kook. He's a fringe nut, tinfoil hat, all this stuff, right? Doesn't really talk about the actual issue at all. Nothing. Brings up this one little bit, and Larry Klayman's like, well, and you'll hear him. He'll say, why don't you actually read what the suit was and read the opinion? You're not doing that because Jeffrey Toobin doesn't want to do that. And in fact, Jeffrey Toobin tries to make it seem like he's very concerned about this. This is a big issue for Americans. This is very important. But later at the end, he says, I happen to think there isn't a problem with the NSA thing. So he doesn't really think it's a big issue. He's trying to pander to the viewers to win them over to his side to then say that Larry Klayman is an idiot. See, I'm with you, viewers. I think this is very important. And Larry Klayman is beneath you to bring this. This is stupid. We don't even need to pay attention to this. This is crazy. Jeffrey Toobin has no frigging problem with the NSA or the FISA courts or anything.
He has no problem with the breaches of the Fourth Amendment. He has no problem with police pulling people over and using their own so-called discretion when that's not what is in the Fourth frigging Amendment. It's very, very clear. Larry Klayman gets it. Jeffrey Toobin doesn't get it. So here's what Larry Klayman had to say.
Go ahead, Larry.
You know, Jeffrey, I'm surprised to hear you say that because that is not what the case was structured on. Why don't you read the opinion and see what the judge said rather than spending your time with me? You know, and I had differences during the Clinton administration.
We certainly
like
did.
Like Don is a big advocate of Obama. You were a big advocate of Sidney Blumenthal, who did everything he could to destroy conservatives.
That's true.
Jeffrey, it's funny.
It's
Let's
funny.
Just let him
He
go.
Was with okay. ABC News then. That's absolutely true.
You know, it's not about me, Jeffrey, and the fact that you want to try to do a hit on me shows me that you're not a serious person and, frankly, should not be doing legal commentary for CNN.
Correct. Yeah. I think there are very serious issues here, but the idea that you are the representative...
Now, again, see, he thinks there are very serious issues here, right? No, he does not think. He is lying. He does not think there are very serious issues. In fact, I'll play you the whole thing. Wait till you hear the ending, because he undercuts every claim he's making.
Of them is really very unfortunate, because there are important issues here, and they are not obvious in their resolution. But your paranoia and fantasies about the NSA being after you are unworthy of this important case.
I think we should read the complaint. Rather than shooting your mouth off, read the judge's decision. Obviously, the judge didn't agree with you, Jeffrey. Read what he said, and you can find it at freedomwatchusa.org.
And can we, listen.
Good for him.
Both of your conducts are a disgrace.
Oh my gosh, you are. Are you okay?
No, are you okay?
Yeah, because this is not about
here. You've come on and made this about you.
It's not.
This is the key. Did you hear what he just said? And that's the thing I really wanted to get to. I know with commercial breaks, it takes time to get to these things. Listen to this. The host says, you're making this about you. Larry Klayman came on to talk about his suit, the substance of his suit and the decision. They opened up with an almost 2-minute long piece about what? Not the suit. But Larry friggin' Klayman! They made it about Larry Klayman, and then the host has the gall, the unmitigated, asinine gall to say this.
Read what he said, and you can find it at freedomwatchusa.org.
And can we, listen.
This is a disgrace. Both of your conducts are a disgrace.
Check it out.
Oh my gosh, you are. Are you okay?
No, are you okay?
Yeah, because this is not about
here.
You've come on and made this about you. It's not about
you,
the complaint. You wanted to come.
No,
I'm not going to.
Did you hear that? First he says, this is not about, he doesn't finish by saying you, and then he says, you have made this about you. And it wasn't Larry Klayman who did anything. They attacked him. And this happens over and over and over again in pop network news. CNN is particularly guilty of this, but this is one of the things, I just need to stress this. Liberty-minded people, and Larry is no libertarian, but he's closer than these guys on CNN. He's a sort of paleo-conservative, a traditional conservative. So he's much more inclined towards smaller government, constitutional systems, states making decisions and things like that, which is fine with me up to a point. I'm an anarchist, but I would at least go for smaller spheres of control where people could leave to get away from bad areas, okay? And that's something that F.A. Hayek brought up decades ago in the School of Austrian Economics. But this situation occurs a great deal when politicians propose legislation that will initiate aggressive, coercive action against people. They want to pass statutes which will force people to pay or do things that they would rather not have done, and they would have done something freely of their own accord in a different way, right? And who's seen as the aggressor when someone speaks up against it? Who's seen as the negative guy? The guy who defends. The guy who actually says, hey, something's wrong with this. You are coming in and invading my rights, and I looked like the bad guy. They do this all the time. They have done this since the 60s, 50s, 40s. 30s, since Roosevelt's era. You're the bad guy if you at all have the gall or audacity or even some minuscule remnant of a frigging human spine that you decide, hey, maybe I'll stand up to this coercion and aggression and threatening from the politicians who claim that they have the power and mandate to do this because they sit in an office. These people are the flax for them. When we come back in the next hour, I'm going to go to that smiling cherub, Jeffrey Toobin, and show you that Jeffrey Toobin does not really care about the, excuse me, the magnitude of this issue. He doesn't think this is an important issue at all. He thinks it's fine that the spying should continue, and he thinks it's a good thing. Hey, by the way, the live disc, double disc, actually, of Muse playing in Rome has been released. If you like Muse, check them out. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio, and big thanks to all the folks who support the Liberty Radio Network. If you want to support us at the Liberty Conspiracy, we are very pleased to get any of your donations. It helps us rent out the space that we require for all the podcasts that we load up there, and we get a lot of great responses from students who listen to us, and I've spoken at schools and stuff, and it's kind of neat to be able to get the teenagers in to check out things on Austria. Economics, the origins of money and commodities and things like that, free market economics, and the moral treatment of one's neighbor. Going back to the time of Aristotle, really, with the schism between Aristotle and Socrates and Plato. And Aristotle wasn't all freedom-minded, but he was quite different, that's for sure. So now we're in contemporary politics, and boy, it is tough to have to handle this all the time. So And by the way, again, I have to apologize if I sound kind of funny. I've got a little cut on my mouth, so it's bothering me. So I've got my magic, fantastic product from Colgate called Aurabase. If you ever have any pain in your mouth, Aurabase is just, I love you, Aurabase. You're so good. You're so good to me. Okay, now, I'm talking about Larry Klayman's appearance on CNN, right? and journalistic integrity, or the lack thereof, where they are essentially lying to people by not providing them the information, by trying to broad brush somebody, you know, attack the provider of the lawsuit, that sort of thing. So let's get into lying, right? All right. There's the Damned, Machine Gun Etiquette, baby. Let's hear the drums from Rat Scabies, little guitar. That can even make me believe Adolf Hitler sent you into Russia for the winter. Oh, man, those guys are great. I loved Craig Ferguson's description. He was a big fan of the Damned. He grew up in just near Edinburgh, I think. And by the way, one of his first television appearances was in Red Dwarf as Confidence in a great episode called Confidence and Paranoia. But Craig Ferguson had the Damned on, and he talked about how when he heard Machine Gun Etiquette, or it might have been Damned, he mentioned how it was the first time he had been introduced to punk rock. A friend, you know, said, "Come on over, I got to play this record for you." And the Damned were the first band to release a single, a punk band to release a single, first punk band to go on tour. And he goes, "And I'd never heard this. I didn't know what I was hearing." And he says, "But I liked it." He says, "It sounded like musical fighting." That's just perfect. Musical fighting. That's what I love. I like a lot of different kinds of music, but I particularly like music that sounds like athletes playing music. It's got musicality, but at the same time, the drummer is, you know, super fast, super dexterous, and or, right? I mean, if you ever hear the New Bomb Turks, their first drummer, I'm telling you, man, or, you know, look at Keith Moon. I mean, Keith Moon, it's like, what the heck? Some people, it's just, forget about it, Dave, you know? Look at Gene Krupa from the swing era. Buddy Rich, of course. I happen to like Gene Krupa better, you know? Louis Belson invented the double bass. He's like, "Well, I had another foot there. I wasn't doing anything." So he was 17 years old. He invented the freaking double bass. My dad played me one of the great songs Louis Belson appears on with Duke Ellington. And it's one of the first times he introduced the double bass to a large audience. And I was sitting there. I was like, "Wow, Dad, that's so cool. They had two drummers going." He goes, "No, Gard, that was one drummer." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "That's Louis Belson, man. Louis friggin' Belson." Louis Belson died, I think, about three or four years ago. And he was still giving, like, drumming seminars and stuff. And he was, like, 80 years old. I know I'm going off topic, but there's a video. If you go on YouTube, there are lots of videos of Louis Belson, even as an old guy, drumming. And one of the things is, and I know people argue about this in drumming circles, But I'm not a drummer, but I've messed around with the sticks a little bit just to test it, just to see. And, you know, a lot of drummers will go one way or the other on it. But, you know, supposedly you're supposed to hold the drumsticks on the drumstick on your left hand, not with your thumb and forefinger holding the stick like, you know, you're batting down like a little kid would hold it, you know, like gripping it. You're supposed to put it through, is it your forefinger and your middle finger? Or your middle finger and the next finger. I don't know which, but you're supposed to put it between a couple fingers, and you use your wrist in a way so that when you're doing rolls, you can get a roll more easily. There's less ground that you're covering. You just sort of twitch a little bit, and you can get it. And if you're holding a drumstick the other way on the left hand, the right hand is just the regular, you grab it, you know, like you would expect it. But the left hand is the one that people debate. So for years, especially in jazz circles, the tradition was to hold that stick. You'll see Buddy Rich. Watch videos of Buddy Rich. Watch videos of Gene Krupa. Watch videos of Louis Belson. You know, all the great jazz drummers, they do this. There are still some contemporary drummers who do this. And And so they'll hold it in a certain way. And what's really cool is if you see this video of Louis Belson, where in this one video in particular, he's at this college, and there's this young dude. They're both on these pedestals. This young dude is just wailing, doing it the old style, like, blah, 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 and he's good. He's good, right? Then Louis Belson comes in. This old dude, he was probably in his 70s, right? And he's like, just, it's like a pneumatic machine. It's just like all over the map. He's just friggin' crazy, right? And you see, he's doing this stuff, and then he lifts up one hand. He's doing it with one hand. And you see the all the people watching. I'm like, oh man, oh my god, man! It's just like, it's awesome. They're just like, wow! And it's Louis Belson, man. Of course he's gonna do that. So cool. Anyway, you get a chance. Rat Scabies, great drummer for the Damned. Now they've got Pinch, who's also a great drummer. You have to have a great drummer for the Damned. They're a punk band. They're truly musicians. They're great musicians. And I love that expression from Craig Ferguson: musical fighting. And I love music that has that sort of athleticism to it, where it's pushing. And it can be electronic music too. I mean, the Prodigy does that sort of thing. You know, the beats, when Public Enemy came out with She Watched Channel Zero, they upped the beats per minute to, you know, to the stratosphere. I like that sort of stuff. It just drives me. Anyway, so I want to get into a little something else now and talk about the lying of the news media in a way. But also the lies of the federal government. So we move from CNN covering for the feds, trying to knock out the messenger, not the message of the about the NSA spying program, to real information that has been provided. And we've got to tip the hat to NBC News's Michael Isikoff, brought us this information. It was republished by InfoWars about some folks who are actually admitting that the White House has been lying about the NSA program stopping terrorism. We'll return. Remember our website, libertyconspiracy.com. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Muchas gracias for listening. Oh, I have to open up the Skype line. That was kind of lame of me, wasn't it? Yeah, it's GARDNER.Goldsmith on Skype. If you want to contact me live on the air, vocally, or if you want to send me a live message. At the beginning of the program, I posed a question, and I will mention this question once more, because we're going to be going to it shortly. I mentioned I was going to try to make this a podcast. This information about CNN has taken a long time. Of course, you have, you know, commercial breaks that break things up and so on, and then you have to backtrack, so it's, you know, it's kind of tricky. It's not exactly like a podcast. You can't go as quickly right through things. But I posed the question. I said, when you hear the terms privacy law and expert in privacy law, do you react with a positive feeling about your rights, a negative feeling, or do you need more context? All right? And I'll read you some of the responses from folks like David, Tyron, Nathan, Jeff, folks like that. Okay? And Scott, by the way, Scott in Colorado, thanks for giving me the thumbs up on that on Facebook. And folks want to contact me on Facebook, it's Gardner Goldsmith on Facebook, or just look up L space G space Grande on Facebook. Okay, now, we talked about Larry Klayman's suit. At a few days after Larry Klayman's suit was found to have been thumbs up from a district court judge, despite the fact that the CNN reporters seem to really dislike that ruling, and Jeffrey Toobin disagrees with it but thinks it's of great importance. It's great import. Yeah, sure, Jeffrey. Yeah, I'm sure you'd rather spend your time concentrating on other things. The debate is so important, but I just want to make sure it goes my way. Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, a few days after that decision, actually, the day that decision came down, President Obama...
Sweetie. Hey, sweetie. Honey pie. How you doing? Listen, I don't just call reporters in Illinois, sweetie, because that would be sexist and patriarchal. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just come in here to your studio, see, and call you sweetie. Sweetie, is that okay? Honey pie? Honey bunch? Sweetie? Pookums? Bran flake? Come on, flaky. We are trying to do what we can to make a better nation, sweetie.
Okay. Well, Barack Obama claimed once more he didn't go into specifics the way that other folks like Dick Cheney and Mr. Clapper have claimed that there are at least 50 instances of terrorist threats that were thwarted by the great courage of the NSA spying program. Remember they told us that when Ed Snowden released that information back, you know, 9 months ago? Remember that?
Oh, no, this is just atrocious. How dare that man? Oh, it will allow terrorists to come and attack us. They will find ways to get us. Look at all the terrorist attacks the U.S. government has stopped.
Cricket. Cricket. Yeah. For years, folks on the libertarian side, folks at antiwar.com, folks at the Mises Institute, folks at lewrockwell.com, the Independent Institute, and others, like even Russia Today, have reported, that they have not provided any evidence, and the only so-called terroristic activities that they have thwarted in the United States were terrorist activities that were started by federal agents, particularly the FBI, and they drew people into them. They just had one recently, last week, the same exact thing. Same exact thing. It's just amazing. It's stunning. So, they still made this claim the day that Larry Klayman's suit was revealed to have been victorious in the district court last week, right? Barack Obama comes out and he more generally says,
well, honey bunches of oats, bran flake, Cheerio. Ooh, Cheerio, I like that. Oh, goodness. Ooh, it's all about the O. Okay, so I just got to say that don't forget, this program has been very useful in stopping terrorist activities. I'm just saying that.
Oh, really? So can you give us some examples?
Well, you don't have the security clearance, honey bunch.
Oh, I see. So you're just going to tell us and we should just believe you.
Absolutely. Sure, I could, if you want to make an analogy, you could pretend that I'm sort of like a Schwarzenegger and I've been caught having affairs before, but I'm telling you now, no affairs have been had.
Uh-huh, sure. Well, Michael Isikoff, and hats off to Michael Isikoff from NBC News. He wrote, this was retweeted at Infowars.com, he wrote a very good report that, yes indeed, exposes the fact that even people on the White House panel on the NSA surveillance program have explicitly stated that there is no evidence that the bulk collection of telephone call records stopped any terrorist attacks. Isikoff writes, Dateline Washington, a member of the U.S. White House review panel on NSA surveillance, said he was absolutely surprised. Really? What hole has this guy been living in? Absolutely surprised when he discovered the agency's lack of evidence that the bulk collection of telephone call records had thwarted any terrorist attacks. Well, we've only been waiting for months for them to come out with any evidence that would show us that we were incorrect. Go ahead, just give it to us. Quote, it was, huh? Hello? What are we doing here? End quote, said Jeffrey Stone, a University of Chicago law professor, in an interview with NBC News. Quote, the results were very thin, end quote. Wafer thin. While Stone said the mass collection of telephone call records was a, quote, logical program from the NSA's perspective, one question the White House panel was seeking to answer was whether it had actually stopped any terror attacks that might have been really big, end quote. We found none, said Stone.
I'm tapping my foot. That's the universal sign for me, which means it's not universal. It's my sign, but yeah. Tap, tap, tappity tap, 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 tap. Is there anything else that we need to say? Oh, but wait, there's more. If you order now, you'll not only receive the Ginsu knife, you'll get the spiral slicer. Down and down, around and around, and you'll have a beautiful Garnier dinner table. Now how much would you pay?
Okay. I'll get into some of the cases in a little while, like Olmstead and stuff like that, the Griswold case, which opened up the door for Roe v. Wade and stuff like that, which is kind of interesting because they claim Roe v. Wade is about privacy, but when you actually look at it, there's a third party involved. It's not just the parents. It's the new fetus that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really about privacy. That's one of the major problems with considering the idea that abortion is about privacy if you're looking at the government sphere. Because according to the 14th Amendment, everyone's supposed to be protected equally under the law. So if you are a person who considers the fetus to be human and to be being, which in both cases that's prima facie, it is human and it is being at that point. It is existent on its own. It is growing of its own accord. It is getting nutrients from the female, but it is a living entity unto itself. You have to say, where do the laws apply to protect human beings consistently under the 14th Amendment. But I'll get into that later. However, despite this information from NBC, what does the National Journal come out with? And the National Journal is even worse than NBC. So thank goodness they had Michael Isikoff giving that report. Thank goodness. Good job, Michael Isikoff. Good job, NBC. Great to see that. What we see from the National Journal is one of the other members, the former acting director of the CIA, saying, well, the phone surveillance just wasn't enough. We need to go further in breaching the Fourth Amendment. We need to be able to read emails. Well, that's something that the government's already been doing, but we'll tell you about it more when we return. We continue at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Don't forget to visit our website if you get the opportunity. I sounded almost like Tom Brokaw there. Oh, forget. Don't forget to visit our website, libertyconspiracy.com, because freedom is out of fashion nowadays. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and thank you very much for joining us. Pardon me while I take some more of this Aura-based, Colgate Aura-based stuff and put it on my mouth so I can actually talk. Oh, man, that stuff is awesome. Oh, God, that's very helpful. Okay, that's magic, man. Yeah, it's like Hart would sing about that, you know what I'm saying? So, all right, welcome back to the program. Talking about the NSA so-called metadata program, which is only one facet of a giant, giant octopus leviathan creature that is invading our rights every day. And it's not just through the NSA. You know, your privacy rights are manifest when we talk about this NSA thing. But your privacy rights are being invaded by the medical fascism law, the so-called Obamacare law. Your privacy rights are invaded by the IRS. I mean, why should somebody else tell you that you must involuntarily give up anything to them? Who are those people to do that? I feel like Seinfeld. Who are those people? Who are those people to do that? I don't get it. Kramer, where do those people come from? How do they get that idea? That I have to give them information. Well, I don't get it. Right? I mean, really, there. It comes down to that. It's a fundamental moral prerogative to choose for oneself. That's all you need to think, right? Probably. But they will come up with every possible rationale and a juggernaut of dyspeptic arguments to tell you that if you want to be left alone, you're the bad guy. So, now we get into the final piece of tonight's program. I posed the question at the beginning, when you hear the terms privacy law and expert in privacy law, do you react with a positive feeling about your rights or a negative feeling, or do you need more context? Here comes the context. As I mentioned, Michael Isikoff, he already reported that one of the White House panel members of five, one of the White House five, I love how they give names to those guys, the White House five, said, we didn't find evidence. There was a lack of evidence that the bulk collection of telephony data stopped any terror attacks, despite what Clapper, what Cheney, what Obama, what all the massive statists say. And by the way, Democrats, maybe you might apply, if you feel resentment about this, even a scintilla, a possible spark in what remains of your individualist heart, if you still feel that little bit of heat, maybe you might want to apply it in addition to the NSA surveillance programs, plural, you might want to apply it to invading your medical data, invading your freaking bank account, invading what you earn, invading the private contracts you make or your employer makes with anybody. How about that? You see, because it's called a box that Pandora used to own. You open it and anybody can open it. Guess what comes out? The state. It's going to get you. And you might not like the way it gets you. You might say, oh, well, we got to stop the big corporations, the big business people. Okay, there you go. Have fun. You're on the path, baby. Enjoy. Unbelievable. It's amazing to me how people don't see it. They think they can stop it. They think they can direct the machine to go in a different way. It doesn't work that way. God, how many... Oh, jeez, I'm crow. Throughout history, how many frigging times do you have to see it happen? You know? How many politicians do you have to see do this crap before you say, gee, maybe the problem is not the politicians we vote for because they're always trending in that direction. Maybe it's the entity they're in called the state. I don't know. So now let's turn to the answer to the question, and then we'll look at a few precedents. If we have to go overtime in a podcast, no problem. So this one comes from the very statist National Journal. Yes. Hello, I'm from the National Journal. Michael Hirsch writes for the National Journal, Michael Morell, the former acting director of the CIA and a member of President Obama's Task Force on Surveillance, said in an interview on Sunday that a controversial telephone data collection program conducted by the National Security Agency should be expanded to include emails. He also said the program, far from being unnecessary, could prevent the next 9/11. So you see, this is where they're going to get you. They're going to say, well, yeah, we don't actually have any evidence that this phone program stopped anything. That's why we have to do more. So the government fails, and then what do they ask for? They ask for, and they get, more power. Where did the FISA courts originate? They originated from whence did they come? They came from the reaction to Nixon's spying in the Watergate stuff. And they said, oh, wait a minute. The government's been spying. Well, we better stop that.
So we're going to write a law that allows the government to spy on foreigners, called the FISA law, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That's what we'll do. We'll fix that problem of spying on Americans by allowing and explicitly stating through statute that the government can spy on foreigners. And if there's an American on the other side of the phone, tough luck, Charlie. It's not really spying on an American. We're really spying on the foreigner, and the American's just caught up in it.
So they so-called address a problem, but what do? They grant the government powers, right?
Look at the Hamdi case and the Hamdan case in the Supreme Court. Those guys were held by the Bush administration at Gitmo. They weren't getting their habeas corpus hearings.
Got to have a habeas corpus hearing unless Congress lifts the writ of habeas corpus, and they hadn't lifted it, so, right? They're being held as so-called enemy combatants, an amorphous nonsense term, means nothing. If the government is not at war, you capture people, you can't hold them as prisoners of war, you have to hold them under U.S. criminal code for terrorism.
That's the point.
But instead, they said, oh, we have to find a third way. We can't actually bring them to court. No. We got to have a special court, see? So we'll make it up as we go.
Hey, how you doing? It's like Andrew Dice Clay. Whoa, ba-boom, ba-ba, hey, I came up with the answer. Ow!
Right? It's insane. There is no control. The Constitution doesn't stop these jerks. They make it up. Until maybe you get one of these district court guys doing something, but that's very rare, and the trend is always towards greater government power. Michael Morrell wants more government power, and since the power that they've already usurped failed to stop any terrorist attacks to show that they could, he says, well, of course, we've got to have more. Morrell, seeking to correct any misperception that the presidential panel had called for a radical curtailment of NSA programs, said he is in favor of restarting a program that the NSA continued in 2011 that involved the collection, discontinued in 2011. By the way, they didn't discontinue it. That involved the collection of metadata for internet communications. That program only gets a brief mention in a footnote on page 97 of the task force report, Liberty and Security in a Changing World. Oh, doesn't that sound all touchy-feely, huh?
Quote, I would argue, actually, that the email data is probably more valuable than the telephony data. Telephony data, I love that. Morrell told National Journal in a telephone interview. Boy, they got a quick response on this one. They got all over this issue in the National Journal. They really flew on this. You can bet that the last thing a smart terrorist is going to do now is call someone in the United States.
Yeah. You think they're going to be using internet emails the way you think they're using them either? Morrell also said that while he agreed with the report's conclusion that the telephone data program conducted under Section 215 of the Patriot Act, a section that Barack Obama wanted to make sure was brought back, quote, made only a modest contribution to the nation's security so far. Well, that's funny. Didn't make any contribution, according to this other guy that Michael Iskoff reported on. Anyway, there's a lot more to this. We'll discuss this in the podcast form, and I'll go into some of the Supreme Court decisions on privacy as well, so you get some information. Then we'll go into the actual Fourth Amendment. Thank you for listening to the radio show right now. And in a moment for the podcast listeners, I will continue to record. Be seeing you. All right, podcast audience, thank you for being here with me. Now, a couple of the little items here. I want to continue reading from this Michael Morrell piece. This piece about Michael Morrell from the National Journal. Says here, Morrell also said that while he agreed with the report's conclusion that the telephone data program conducted under Section 215 of the Patriot Act made, quote, only a modest contribution to the nation's security. And again, that's not what the interview subject said to Michael Isikoff of NBC News. Let me see if I can quote him. Let's see. It was, huh? Hello? What are we doing here? The results were very thin. Isikoff says
The man was absolutely surprised when he discovered the agency's lack of evidence that the bulk collection of telephone call records had thwarted any terrorist threats. Any. Okay. He says, I would argue, this is what Mr. Morrell says, I would argue that what effectiveness we have seen to date is totally irrelevant to how effective it might be in the future. Hmm. I see. So the government has shown no effect in any way whatsoever, and an invasion of the Fourth Amendment, and yet you say, but, you know, it could be really good in the future, baby. Oh, stick with me.
Mm-hmm.
He says, this program, 215, has the ability to stop the next 9/11. And if you added emails in there, it would make it even more effective. Had it been in place in 2000 and 2001, I think that probably 9/11 would not have happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well,
I bet you you're wrong. But we can't go back, can we, Mr. Confident?
We do know that the CIA and FBI didn't contact each other about these guys. Weird, huh? They totally dropped the ball. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist guy. It's just, you know, the CIA had information, didn't share it with the FBI, and boom. That was during the Clinton administration. The Bush administration was totally out to lunch. Anyway, continuing just a little more, the presidential panel's 304-page report touched off a fresh backlash against NSA surveillance programs, which is why the National Journal is coming up with the report, I'm pretty certain. Anyway, against the National Security Agency surveillance programs, coming only days after a U.S. District Judge Richard Leon ruled that the agency's regular collection of most Americans' phone records was probably unconstitutional. The panel, which consisted of Morrell, former counterterrorism advisor Richard A. Clark, University of Chicago law professor Jeffrey Stone, Peter Swire, an expert in privacy law at the Georgia Institute of Technology, and former Obama administration regulation czar Cass Sunstein concluded that the Section 215 program needed to be substantially reined in. It said, now this is the key thing, it said that the telephone metadata collection involving the tracking of numbers of calls and where, when, and to whom they're made without examining content should be taken out of the hands of the government and left to the service providers or to a private third party and subjected to individual court orders. So again, this is just sleight of hand. Okay? I think it's very clear that people like the person who spoke with Michael Isikoff, Jeffrey Stone, the University of Chicago law professor, know that people are going to continue to ask for the federal government to produce evidence that they have actually stopped, positive evidence that they have stopped terrorist attacks through their NSA programs. He knows that people are going to press this, they're going to bring lawsuits like Larry Klayman's suit, and I bet they responded this way because of Larry Klayman's suit, and they know that eventually this information is going to get out. So they want to step ahead of this information. Right? They want to get ahead of it, and they want to say, oh, yeah, this hasn't worked. So what we want to do is reform this. We want to protect people's privacy, right? So how are they going to protect their privacy? Are they going to stop the collection? Are they going to stop the ease with which the federal government can get all of this data? No. What they're going to do is they're going to incentivize private corporations, which is exactly what they tried to do with CISPA. Remember, we reported on CISPA. What they wanted to do was they wanted to allow the information to be collected by the companies and then give them lawsuit protection. They would be immune from suits if the companies shared the information with the federal government. So if the companies broke their agreements with their contracted consumers like you and me and shared this information with the feds, then the Congress was going to write CISPA in such a way that those companies could not be sued. So Comcast and, you know, whatever, MSN and Yahoo and all those guys, right? on the telephone data, the information collected through internet, any of this stuff. This is what they wanted to do. Now, what they're trying to do here is they're trying to bring this about once more. And they're trying to portray it as the government stepping back when, in fact, it's just moving forward and making it less so-called government and more so-called private companies. Well, the private companies collected it. And then, you know, we asked them for it. They voluntarily gave it to us. That's not correct. That is a breach of the contract with you. And this is very interesting to me because these guys have nothing to stand on. They've got nothing to stand on. And then they use that nothingness to say, we need to do more. And they've been nailed having broken the Fourth Amendment. So rather than saying, yes, this was a breach of the Fourth Amendment, they're trying to make it look as if they're reforming the system when, in fact, just like they did in 1978 with FISA, they're actually going to expand it and give themselves even easier access with the cover that the information was collected by private corporations. I mean, it's just, it's so transparent. It's like, God, how stupid do you have to be to not figure this out? I mean, it's like, man. So let's once more just quickly check here. The Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Oh, by the way, before I get to the Fourth Amendment, when I talked about the so-called legal scholar, the expert on privacy law, Peter Swire, this is a greater point, and I just want to bring this up. What if you believe in natural rights, as in the concept that either God-given or something that you can observe just through human behavior, observation of human behavior. I believe it doesn't matter whether you're a religious person or you just observe this, that through repeated iterations of human interaction, human beings come up with sort of societally accepted modes of behavior such that they sort of are similar to, look, don't attack me, I won't attack you. Please don't mess with my spouse, I won't mess with yours. Don't steal my stuff, I won't steal your stuff. And people who don't conform to those societally accepted modes of behavior tend to be shunned, and they try to keep them away from the group and or, you know, the people who are interacting, and the people who accept it are brought closer. They succeed, they prosper, and so on and so forth. We can see this throughout human history. Ancient Celtic societies were great at doing this. The ancient Icelandic society, the Vikings, did this very, very well. And you didn't need government for this. This is just something that spontaneously grew through human interaction, right? Now, you can apply the term rights to that. It's just a word. It's not some, you know, magical thing like you're given these rights or whatever. To me, it's just a word that people use to facilitate a recognition of that set of stuff that over time people have come to see as, oh, yeah, we're not going to mess with that. Okay, yeah, that's you've got a right to that. You've got a right to that. So it's sort of like a claim. You know, I've got a claim to this. I've got a claim to myself, the fruits of my labor and my property and the things that I've voluntarily agreed to with others, and they have a claim to what is their claim, right? Okay. You don't have a claim to somebody else, so it's a negative reciprocity thing, right? So when you look at, and this is where I get to the expression that to the question I posed on Facebook. When you look at the term expert in privacy law, or privacy law, what does that connote in contemporary parlance? To me, what that implies, what that connotes, is statute. An expert on, like Jeffrey Toobin, supposedly an expert on the precedents, stare decisis, the decisions made by people in government about your rights. Completely different from natural common law rights. These guys are talking about statutory law, not rights. These guys are talking about the state. These guys are talking about people writing laws, politicians writing laws, and politically appointed judges interpreting the laws
small groups of people who work within the entity that has the monopoly on legal force to tell you how to live and take your stuff whenever they want their funding. That is not the concept of rights. That is not the concept of natural law that grew over centuries. So when I see the term an expert in privacy law, he's just talking about the laws written by the state. And as I mentioned on Facebook, I have some problems with that. So let's go through some of the great conversation and discussion we had. I posed that question. Do you react with a positive feeling about your rights when you hear that term, a negative feeling, or do you need more context? So they have people who are involved with so-called being experts on privacy law. They have constitutional lawyers. They have all these different people, former CIA department heads, this sort of thing. And what do you have? David writes, it makes me feel positive because I'm thinking this is someone who knows how much the government is intruding on our civil rights. That was David's opinion. Tyron, he writes, experts in law are not necessarily experts in morality. Being a natural skeptic and contrarian, I'd say an expert, so-called, in privacy law is a legislative sophist who finds ways for the government to subvert the Fourth Amendment. So, I wrote, at the time, same time that Tyron was actually writing his, I wrote mine. I said, a hint to my take on it. Natural law is considered predating and separate from statutory law. Statutory law, as an outgrowth of the state, is, by definition, an infringement of natural law. The two do not overlap. By its nature, the state can't exist without an immediate erosion of rights, and the erosion grows from there. So when I hear a person talking about, quote, privacy law, end quote, I see it as likely indicating statutes about privacy, which indicates to me that the state, rather than saying, hands off privacy, is, over time, as it always does, creating more statutes and situations in which natural law privacy is being curtailed by statute. An expert in this has likely gone to law school to know of precedents established by government where more and more exceptions to privacy have been created, and that doesn't strike me as good. Sometimes you might get someone who is a true defender of privacy, but more often than not, you get so-called experts who excuse invasions of privacy based on precedent or interpretations of the Constitution. Those interpretations and the Constitution itself have allowed for the growth of the invasive surveillance state, on-site police infringement of the Fourth Amendment, and more. So I don't trust the kind of lingo, that kind of lingo, to coincide with real civil rights 9 times out of 10. Nathan writes, privacy is my right to keep things personal. Pretty much everyone's a privacy expert. When you say privacy law, it involves sentiment already expressed here. It invokes sentiment already expressed here. Excellent, Nathan. Excellent. Absolutely right. In my opinion. Jeff writes, I'm neutral until I know the specifics. So, Jeff, hope we've given you enough specifics. And once more, just to conclude, everybody, you know, you don't need me to preach, obviously, but hopefully I put together a cogent argument here. The Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and again, I'm a constitutionalist in that I know it, and I know the arguments behind it, and I know a number of the Supreme Court cases and the arguments behind those, and so on and so forth, okay? But I'm a libertarian anarchist, and so I don't think the Constitution goes far enough. I mean, I've stated it many times. But anyway, the rules under which those guys believe they're supposed to be operating, or at least they tell us they're going to be operating, they don't believe it, actually, says here, Fourth Amendment, Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath
or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, why should there be an oath or affirmation? It's supposed to be done publicly, in front of others. Because the British were barging in at any time. They weren't telling people why they were breaking into their farms, into their barns, taking stores of grain, supposedly searching for weapons and things like that. They didn't like that. This was supposed to be a community thing. If the police thought they had to go searching somewhere, they would announce it. Boom, we're going in. And a judge would, of course, I should say, a judge would announce it, and the police would go in. Now, I happen to think that all associations should be voluntary, so even at that level, I don't think someone should be taxed against his will for a police force or a judicial system that they don't like. That could invade their privacy at any time. But in the constitutional world, it's supposed to be the judge publicly issues a warrant, cites the person who is supposed to be searched and or the things that are supposed to be searched, the items being sought, and it's supposed to be something that is a check against the government just running roughshod into people's homes and checking stuff out anytime they want. There's supposed to be a concept of privacy. Now, this concept of privacy supposedly was upheld in various areas, but not really. So, for example, they say the Griswold decision was very much in favor of privacy, or the Roe versus Wade was very much in favor of privacy. Griswold was about a Connecticut law against distributing contraceptives and contraceptive information to married couples. That was struck down by the Supreme Court. It said, no, you know, this is an individual decision for families. Seems to make a lot of sense. That's the information about the contraceptives and contraceptive information. Now, I think they're also talking about abortion information as well, which is clearly not contraceptive information. But later, the Roe v. Wade decision comes in, and as I mentioned, the Roe v. Wade decision supposedly involves a woman's right to privacy. But what we're talking about here is a woman and another human individual, the fetus, which is a distinct human individual. So that one takes a little bit more thought to find out whether or not it's really a privacy issue, or is it something about the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. Is that fetus a human being that also deserves the protection of the laws, right? So that's really not a privacy issue, but they made it a privacy issue, which is erroneous. But let's go back to 1928, to the Olmstead decision. That's Olmsted. The Olmstead decision in 1928, in that the U.S. Supreme Court decided that wiretapping was legal. And it didn't matter what the reason or motivation was, because it wasn't expressly prohibited by the Constitution. That's interesting, because Justice Brandeis, and you know, they have Brandeis University in around Boston. Justice Brandeis actually was a dissenter there. He was a real leftist as far as economic stuff goes, but he was a dissenter, and his dissent was right. Because it's not expressly prohibited by the Constitution? I'm sorry, but they wrote the Bill of Rights because they worried that people would start to read into the Constitution things that were not there. They explicitly wrote the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. Shall I read them? Okay. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Where is the right to invade people's communications expressly spelled out in any power granted to Congress?
Where is the right to wiretap expressly granted, the power expressly granted to Congress? It's not there. If they want to initiate that, they have a process. It's called the Fourth Amendment. So wiretapping without a warrant is expressly prohibited by the Constitution. How could the people in the Olmstead decision come up with their decision like that? It's just crazy. Which, hopefully, as I round off the program here, again, we'll get some conservative people thinking, you know, guys, it's not just who's going to direct this ship of state, because it continually trends in one direction. It lists one way towards growth of the state. The more decisions you get, the more likely you're going to get that the politically appointed justices will trend towards voting in favor of more power for the state. It's just the way it works. So, remove the apparatus of the state. Let free individuals try this themselves in a peaceful way. They did it for 1,000 years in Ireland. They did it for 500 years in Viking Age Iceland. It's not historically unprecedented. Well, look, I better get going. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much also listening to me with this, you know, stuff going on with my mouth. I appreciate it. Hopefully it's not too much TMI, but, you know, if my voice is affected, I got to let you know about it so you don't think I'm like, you know, I'm sucking on a lollipop or something like that, or, you know, drinking a milkshake while I'm on the air or something. So thank you so much. Hopefully we're giving you quality stuff. And please visit our website. Very much appreciate it. And let's see. Next week, we're probably not going to have as many shows because I'm going to be away. But looking forward to hearing your feedback over at libertyconspiracy.com. So I will talk to you again soon. Visit our website, please. And don't forget, my novella is for sale right now as a Kindle. And soon it will be available on Nook and available in Amazon paperback. You can get it on Kindle. It's called Bite. And it's a really cool vampire story. The first part of three, I've decided, that are going to be released. And also PendragonPress.net, which is the Welsh company. You can buy it from them as well. Thanks for listening. See you.